alcoholic.
Hi, Judy.
Welcome to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. For those who care to join us, let us open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from any unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundation of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of these simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're on steps 8 and 9, part 2. And I'll turn the meeting over to David.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's David.
Hey.
Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. And it's nice for you all to be here, coming out on a night to be with us and enjoy this meeting in this wonderful house. We started this meeting last summer out of the desire basically to have a big book based step study. We are not here to teach anybody anything out of the book. There's people in the room who know a lot more about the big book than either of us do, like Graham, for instance. But we're really here just to share our own experience, strength, and hope with the working these steps that changed our lives. And so last week we did steps 8 and 9. We usually take a step a week, but we're doing 2 weeks to do steps 8 and 9. So we did notice that the amends portions in the big book kind of mirrors what goes on in the resentments portion. We find out when we take our inventory, there's three prime areas where the root of all my difficulties, my selfishness, my self-centeredness, take form, and that is in resentment, fear, and selfish sex conduct. And we were all kind of surprised to see that the amends section is kind of whacked up that way as well. So last week we did how to make amends to people we hate, or hated, because we're all good now, right? And the fear piece. So tonight, it's going to be a lot of the sex conduct amends, as well as what people call the living amends, getting along with people in our families, in our jobs, our colleagues, etc. So, that being said, we're going to pick up tonight on page 80. Down at the bottom of the page, the chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people, but drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. So, obviously, it's fairly specific about extramarital affairs and so forth. I think about my story, my experience with this. I think about when I was drinking, the last days of my drinking, it wasn't so good. I was alcohol had stopped being the magic potion. Made me 10 feet tall and bulletproof, drastically handsome, and able to sing and talk to people and feel comfortable and all that. It was, I got to where I could basically be drunk and still be frightened, still be miserable, still be angry. I was getting increasingly violent. The things that were that I was capable of saying and doing under the influence of alcohol became increasingly abhorrent to me. The things that, the wreckage that I was leaving behind me, the things that I was saying and doing were horrific to me, horrifying to me, to come to in those. And I think about the loyal and courageous gal who I was with. We celebrated our 21st birthdays together. It had long since stopped being good to me by then, but I was just about to arrive in Alcoholics Anonymous. At age 22, and you guys suggested that I had a problem I couldn't solve, and I rejected that summarily. I'll handle this. Thank you very much. I watched that girl leave the home, leave our home in the morning with big sunglasses on to hide the black eyes that I had given her the night before. That wasn't the first time or the only time that that had happened. But things like that, it wasn't a nightly occurrence either, but things like that were starting to happen to me. And, you know, as big as I am, as strong as I am, I'll bet she weighed 100 pounds soaking wet. And I did that. So, I'm not feeling too good about myself at this point. I tried to get sober. I came to AA. I spent some time in a detox. I swore off forever. I'm through. And I did. I stayed sober for almost a year, age 22 to 23. No AA, no recovery. Just putting the plug in the jug. Just my own willpower, my own strength and determination. I had fancied some ideas about how I could get along in the world without liquor. I decided I should have a hobby. And I had tried vitamin regimens, gym memberships, new jobs, all kinds of things. This particular one is... It's kind of, if it wasn't so sad, it would be funny. But I decided to get an aquarium habit. And I was just walking along Tidewater Drive at Pets and Things, and there was a $9.99 aquarium starter kit. And so I bought it. Oh, I've always wanted to keep fish. That ought to keep me out of trouble. So I dragged that little aquarium home, and I spent a couple of bucks on fish. And within... I'd say within 6 months, I had six different aquariums. Two of them were in excess of 55 gallons. There were breeder tanks. I'd read everything you could put your hands on about aquariums. I'd turned this one bedroom apartment into a tropical paradise. And you can't touch any of it. You know, just stay away from that. Don't breathe on that. So you're going to give them a disease. And this poor woman that I'm living with, she cannot walk across the room without me having to say something about the way that she's walking across the room. You know, I mean, nothing is good enough for me. Nothing is right, and I'm not particularly impressed with her. So the time and place comes where I drink again, and I go on and off the wagon, on and off the wagon. She's loyal, courageous, she's sticking with me through all of this. And to repay her for her loyalty and courageousness, I got a windfall, I got some cash, and I got a buying opportunity on a house. And I decided that I would just go ahead and execute all that, and she wasn't part of the picture. So I broke up with her and put everything I owned out on a lawn and I put a lawn chair out and I got a cooler full of beer and I just sat there and I thought, I'm going to recreate my life. And it was when the people are just walking out of the house with my stuff. I'm like, yeah, give me a dollar for that. Give me $2 for that. And then I saw this original Apple pressing of a John Lennon thing. That was the thing that sobered me up. I was like, oh, you can't have that. Give me that pen. Gathered all my stuff up. So I was probably about, it was probably about 6 months after that I hit bottom and I came to AA and I meant business. And I couldn't wait to make amends to that girl. You know, I have to go see her. I miss her. I made such a mistake, terrible mistake. I got to go make amends. And you guys were like, well, David, there's some steps to come before that. and I argued that you didn't really understand. And you argued that I didn't understand. And basically, you told me that she didn't want to see you anyway, David. And she didn't. So I had to find all that out the hard way. So what are we going to do about a thing like that? I think about my other departure from AA. I came here, she's gone, and I surrendered. I made my surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember sitting in here and I was thinking, you know, I'd gotten to the jumping off place. I cannot imagine living with it. Cannot imagine living without it. I will do what you guys do, whatever it is. I'll get a sponsor. I'll get a home group. I'll do these steps. And I worked as hard as I possibly could, best of my ability, for 5 or 6 years around here, doing what you guys asked me to do in AA. And the consequence of all of that, not only did I get sober, not only did the obsession to drink leave me completely, everything I ever wanted out of life came my way. Everything I ever wanted out of life came my way. Pretty little wife comes along. She wants 3 kids. I want 3 kids. She likes chocolate ice cream. I like chocolate ice cream. That was enough for me. There we go. So down the road we go. All I ever wanted out of life was, I wanted to have a son. I really always dreamt of having a son. 3 of them come along. I always wanted to own my own business. One drops in my lap. I didn't create it. I didn't think it up. I didn't go out and make it happen. One just dropped in my lap. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous and doing what you guys do, I had the courage to say, I'll try. I'll try it. And so I did. And then the checkbook starts to swell. Kids are coming along. I'm signing mortgages. All these things that I ever wanted were coming my way. And all the way, sobriety's losing its priority for me. It's just slipping away. And the reason I go to some pain to tell that is because I never made a decision to leave AA. I never made a decision that sobriety was no longer important. I just leaked away little by slowly. I had a sponsor pass away. I wasn't in a hurry to hire another one. All those people at my home group are jerks anyway. I got to go find another home group, but I'm not in a hurry to do that. Life's going my way. So we'll fast forward. Another loyal and courageous gal. We basically made the deal. We made the what both of us grew up watching television. Both of us grew up in crazy homes. So we made the deal. I'll stay home and raise these children and keep the house right. You go out and make all the money. And I said, that's the way I saw it on TV when I was a kid. By cracky, I'll go do it. And so I did. Now I'm not going to AA. I'm totally sober, completely dry of alcohol, and I'm making money. And I'm coming home and I'm becoming increasingly disenchanted with the way that she is keeping the house, the way that she is raising the children, the way that she is greeting me when I come home. And once again, I'm just back to being an untreated alcoholic. She can't walk across the room without me having something to say about the way she's walking across the room. I'm restless, irritable, discontent, dissatisfied, hypercritical. Nothing is right, and I'm sober. Woohoo! So 14 years sober, Mama's loyal and courageous gal has a boyfriend. I'm being invited to leave the marriage. She's going to stay in the home, and you can go anywhere you want, David. Enjoy yourself. I'm not going to try to keep your kids from you, but you're not welcome here. And that was the thing that propelled me back to Alcoholics Anonymous. So I come back to AA. I still don't want to drink, but my life is on fire. I'm dying. And I come back in here, and I do what I know how to do, which is bitch about my life. You know what she did to me? You know what she did to me? That loyal and courageous girl, you know? And Some of you guys knew what was wrong with me, you know, and some of you guys actually told me what was wrong with me. You say, well, that's great news, David, about your marriage and so forth, but you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. Why don't you come on in here and do what we do? And that situation may or may not right itself to your satisfaction, but you're going to die if you keep going the way you are. Because I'm 14 years sober. I'm homicidal and suicidal on any given day, depending on that razor's edge of self-esteem. If I had a little self-esteem, it was homicide. And anybody know how that goes? Am I the only? Okay. So that may be it for that. Thanks.
Yeah, homicide or suicide. There's only two choices, right? So the husband begins to feel lonely and sorry for himself, and I can only equate this to when I was sober, because when I was drinking, you know, everything was great because I was participating in the plan, and the plan in my life was, you know, we were going to get married, we both had you know, big careers in front of us, and then we had the house and the cars and the baby and the money, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. He was fine, and I was coming apart every day, and going to work hungover, really hungover, and just couldn't pull it together until late in the day, and then I'm staying at work late and coming home late, and he keeps asking me what, you know, are we ever gonna get to go out again? Are we ever gonna, you're always working. Why are you always working? Well, because I can't drink like he's drinking and do my job, which really pissed me off. And so I kind of got to the end of my rope with the drinking. You know, I just couldn't do it anymore. I just could not physically do it anymore. I couldn't emotionally do it anymore. And now the agreement was severed. I was going to stay home. You know, I sold him this idea about how I'm going to stay home now and take care of our daughter and take care of the house. And now I'm going to, because I'm thinking in my head, okay, I can't make it on the outside. You know, I can't hang outside. So maybe if I come home and stay home and do the mommy thing, and the stay-at-home thing, I'll be successful. Well, it didn't work because I'm involved. I just didn't get that part. And I really believed I can do this, and I couldn't do it. And in the midst of that, I decided also that I was going to stop drinking, which was a very unpopular decision in my house. And so I was all these things, you know, we weren't communicating. I was going to AA meetings all the time. There was nothing going on in the home, nothing. There was nothing that resembled a marriage, nothing that resembled a home. He got distracted. He's easily distracted anyway, but he got distracted from the home situation and just didn't want to be there. And I really can't blame him. I remember this one particular night, and I was a crazy person. I was much worse sober than I ever was drunk. I was manageable drunk. You could manage me, because at some point I'd pass out, or you know, or he could manage me drunk. Sober was a whole different thing. I was angry, very angry, and I had nothing to take that off of me, and no program to speak of. And I remember one night, him and my daughter in her room, I had just gone off at her and gone off, you know, I'm just rampaging through the house, screaming and yelling, and he's sitting in there trying to console her. And, you know, my answer to that was, I'm going to go to an AA meeting. So suffice it to say, I didn't present a very good representation of Alcoholics Anonymous or what Alcoholics Anonymous can do. God has allowed me to amend that with him in a very significant way, but the fact is, I really did not my amends in this arena have to do with what I did after I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really didn't buy into the idea that there was something wrong with me. I knew there was something wrong with me, but it wasn't what you said was wrong with me. I'll say that, okay? I'm not agreeing with you. I know there's something wrong, but I'm not buying what you're selling. And I can remember standing in parking lots with people and talking to them about, where's the short version of this? You know, how do I get this pulled together? I have a husband, I have a daughter, I need to be okay. Keep coming back and try to go to this meeting. I'm like, oh my God. Not only are you stupid, you're insulting, is what I'm thinking in my head. And it didn't go very well. So then I got a sponsor who said to me, why don't you try to give what you want? I'm like, really? Have you been in my house lately? Do you see what I have to give to? I tried to do what she said, but honestly, this is how I know I'm alcoholic, because when I stopped drinking, all the alcoholism showed up. The real alcoholism show. That's how I found out I was alcoholic. I knew I couldn't drink because bad things were happening to me. Well, if you have a drinking problem, you can stop drinking. That solves that. Well, I stopped drinking, and I was a candidate for institutionalization, you know? I mean, I'm going to therapists and taking medication and doing all kinds, just going every route I can go. Going to a lot of AA meetings. Anyway, I don't want to belabor the point, but I share that because I think I have that experience for a reason. And we're responsible when we come here. We have family. If you have a family, if you have a husband, if you have children, you're responsible to show up, whether you like it or not. And I didn't care for it, and I showed up the best I could, and it all came apart. Anyway, I'll stop there.
Okay, we're going to continue on page 81. Whatever the situation, we usually have to do something about it. If we're sure our wife doesn't know, should we tell her? Not always, we think. If she knows in a general way that we've been wild, should we tell her in detail? Undoubtedly, we should admit our fault. She may insist on knowing all the particulars. She will want to know who the woman is and where she is. We feel we ought to say to her that we have no right to involve another person. We're sorry for what we've done, and God willing, it shall not be repeated. More than that, we cannot do. We have no right to go further. Though there may be justifiable exceptions, and though we wish to lay down no rule of any sort, we have often found this the best course to take. So what I get from that is that I absolutely cannot save myself at someone else's expense. You know, the rule is that I have to be hard on myself and easy on the other person. There is sort of an intoxication that goes with going out and setting some of these matters straight, you know. And I start wanting to really get after it and get it all done. And I discount the fact that what I'm bringing to the other person may be harmful to them, you know. They might not know everything that I did. They might not need to know. For instance, I don't think my mother needs to know that I was an intravenous drug user. I don't think that's going to help anybody. But it may feel real good for me to confess it, you know? Not in that case, but... The main thing that, as this thing started to... Well, in both the cases that I laid out, with loyal and courageous girl number one in our 20s and my wife that I had become estranged to, the beginning of the amends was the definite and firm counsel from my sponsor to leave them alone. Just leave them alone. Just let them be.
Judy? Yeah, so... not being able to follow directions is a bad problem to have. And last week when Graham was here, he talked about this being a first step problem if you're not really here. And it is. And I can attest to that because I really fought being in Alcoholics Anonymous and being sober for about 6 years without a drink in my hand. So I fought pretty hard to not be here. I would do, you know, I was definitely had a double life. You know, I would do what, I went to a lot of meetings, I'll just say that. I went to a lot of meetings, I did a fifth step. But at the crisis moment, at 6 years of not drinking, is when my sponsor said to me, you have to get honest. And I'm like, about what? You're suffering from untreated alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Really? How can that be? How can I be suffering from untreated alcoholism? And then I rattled off everything I've done, everything I've, you know, read, every prayer I know, all, you know, and she said, it has absolutely no impact if you don't believe that you're hopeless and powerless. This all becomes some theoretical intellectual pursuit. And you can do that, because I did it. You can do it that way. Problem is that it doesn't work. So
that's a problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. So at 6 years of sobriety, I met the crisis, the real crisis, that made me surrender. And, you know, I had all the, he didn't need to come tell me what he was doing because I was following him around Norfolk. And I knew what he was doing. And it was very interesting. I was driving around, you know, considering to go to Bob's Gun Shop and stop in and have a visit. But, you know, that's the condition I was in. So I really got to see alcohol, full-blown alcoholism without alcohol involved. So it convinced me. You know, I think God is really good. He protected me from having to die an alcoholic death, but showed me exactly who I am in detail. So the things that you tell people that are not particularly relevant to the circumstances, you really have to have a sponsor involved when you're doing this to know what you're supposed to say and what you're not supposed to say, because in doing more harm is not the goal of this. So yeah, God help you if you get here and you're not following directions, because you'll do some damn harm, bad harm to people and to yourself. Thanks.
Yeah, it's like the final insult when you're already injured to have someone tell you you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. Me? I'm years sober. What do you know about it? And that's the exact point of departure into the solution. So we're going to pick it up on page 82. If we have no such complication, there's plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But yet he's a long way from making good to the wife and parents for whom he is so shockingly treated, passing all understanding as the patients, mothers, and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring through the lives of others. Hearts are broken, sweet relationships are dead, affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up from the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?" That's me. You know, and I really have to say that I don't know that I was aware of this, but if I look back on it, I can see that that was certainly my attitude. But I really, really wanted drinking to be the problem. I really wanted drinking to be the problem, and I really had this fantasy that once I got rid of the alcohol, then the good character that I possess, the wonderful person that is inside of me, will emerge and, I don't know, maybe be president of the United States or something, or maybe a lesser thing, but certainly something significant and important would be available to me. And all the things that that I'd had trouble with would go away, you know, because I thought drinking was the problem. And it's been a rude awakening, a slow awakening, you know, that alcoholism is this, my alcoholism, it's like my life runs on these two parallel tracks. And on one of them, there is a guy who really does give a shit, you know, a guy who wants to be a son, and wants to be a brother, wants to be a friend, wants to be somebody in the community. I kind of want to care about my lawn, you know. I want to be the guy who cares about his lawn. I really do, you know. I just don't, but I'm in there, man. I know right from wrong, you know. I know what I'm supposed to do. I really do. And then all through that is this alcoholism that's running through my life. And of course, it's fairly obvious what drunken, marauding David does to the guy who wants to like the lawn, you know, or keep his promises, show up at work, you know, that type of thing. The mundane trivialities of daily life, like doing what you say you're going to do, things like that. Can't be bothered with that stuff. I'm drinking, right? And then I put the plug in the jug, and I find, you know what? I'm still restless, irritable, discontent. I still have trouble keeping my promises. I still run off into left field. I still don't really care about the lawn. I can't get these things all moving. So the alcoholism, this rail of alcoholism is going to run through my life for the rest of my life, I believe. You might be able to get away with half measures. Good on you. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to be involved in this whole thing. I'm going to have to do what Alcoholics Anonymous offers us to do, one day at a time for the rest of my life, if I'm going to extract any kind of decency or semblance of decency out of this life. So it talks about the patience of mothers, and the other thing is when I stopped drinking too, as soon as I stopped drinking, since I think it's the problem, and now that the problem is gone, I would like very much for you to forget about the last 15 to 20 years. Would you mind? It's all good now. Going to those meetings.
Winstop won, Ma.
Yeah, ain't it grand to win stuff? So, Graham says it all the time. He tells guys he works with, he's like, you know, your wife's just waiting for you to get drunk. So why don't you just shut up and go ahead and attend to your business? You know, it's not a big deal that you showed up at a meeting tonight. You know, or you haven't had a drink in a few days. You know. So, but I'm that guy. I want a little merit badge for my now good behavior. Good David is emerging, right? So I go to my mother and make these amends. And I ask her, what can I do to make this right? And she says, honey, I just want you to be happy. And it'd be nice if you would return my phone calls. I walk away thinking I got away with one, you know? But now the phone rings. And I got a spiritual dilemma on my hands. What am I going to do now? You know, am I going to walk it off? Pick up the phone? Be nice to my mother? I'd like to tell you that I've been 100% faithful to that promise, but I can't tell you that. I'd like to be, but I haven't. So as we go through this thing, the simple ideas about why don't you go about being a son, David? Why don't you go about being a brother? Why don't you go about being an employee? Why don't you just do that one day at a time and not have to make such a big noise about it? It's more than I can do on a lot of days. But I do find that the more willing I am to come here and to do these things and to be helpful to people, I have a tendency to keep my promises. I have a tendency to pick up the phone, you know, when my mother calls. I do remember her birthday. You know? I mean, I've pulled a couple of those off in a row. My kids take it for granted if I tell them something that it's going to happen just in that way. You know? They don't have a secondary process. Oh, I wonder if the old man's going to, you know, screw this one up. So I have a tendency to be able to meet these obligations. But I'm not good at it. And it's a bit of a struggle for me. It doesn't come naturally to me because I'm thinking about me, you know? I have a tendency to, when I put it when I'm talking to an employer, I say things like, I have a tendency to get interested in things, and that distracts me, you know, because what it is I do whatever I feel like doing. It's what that's really what's happening. If it's interesting to me, I will put all my energy into it. If it's not interesting to me, it doesn't matter if it needs to be done. That's what I'm going to pay attention to. So, all right, I got ahead of myself. Pass.
So just to pick up on the point about knowing right from wrong, I knew right from wrong. I just didn't want to do it. I never did anything I didn't want to do. And when I came to AA, I had this perception that I was shortchanged. I never got what I wanted. Nobody ever really cared about me. And it was completely the opposite. I mean, after I was sober a while, I was like, wow, I always got what I wanted. That's a problem. Got everything I wanted. Everybody did what I wanted them to do. I would just make so much of a tornado that they'd have to make it stop. And it's always easier, if you're managing people, it's a whole lot easier to just ignore the person that's causing the most trouble and get rid of them, you know? Well, if you carry that over into relationships, people generally don't stay around and try to help you work that out. they don't. You know, my sponsor used to say to me, she said, I'm here and committed to do this. The rest of the world isn't. So you better start acting right. And I had no idea. Oh my God, it was such a blow to find out that I had selfish and inconsiderate habits. I had no idea about any of that. I really thought I was just misunderstood. And then you try to raise a child and be like that. Oh my goodness, terrible, terrible conflict. When you're raising a kid and you're a kid, now you're having a temper tantrum. It's very, very hard. Thank God I had people around me who knew how selfish and inconsiderate I was and helped me get away from her and get her with people who could be considerate and thoughtful of her so she could be raised and be okay, which she is. So you just don't know. I just had no idea the depth of this, how selfish and how inconsiderate. Absolutely. I guess I didn't know until my first real enlightenment about this was hadn't had a drink in 2 years, and I was sitting at home on my couch, and I just thought, you know, I really don't care. I just don't care. I don't care about you. I don't care about this. I don't care nothing. I just don't care. If it all ended tomorrow, it'd be fine with me. And I was horrified at that. How can you be like that? But that's 2 years without any alcohol in my system. It took 2 years of no alcohol for me to even get that. So if you come here and you think you're going to get this straight in a month, I got news for you. And if you're anything like me, that's not happening. This is a long walk, you know? And the demands, oh, I want the job, I want the husband, I want the boyfriend, I want the bank account, I want the car. God, could you just breathe? Could we just get you so you could breathe? And not be in an angry rage or be in a depression, or could we work on that first? And that is all evidence of selfishness and inconsideration. You know, in the step book, it talks about depression and taking that and dumping it, you know, being a depressed personality, which I'm not going to go into here, but I have that personality. And it's... the medical profession thinks it needs to be medicated, and Alcoholics Anonymous said, you need to work the steps and find God. And when I finally accepted that answer, things started to change for me. But you live as a depressive person, which all that meant for me was, if you wouldn't do what I wanted you to do right away, I got pretty damn sad about it. And I made you suffer. You're going to pay a price. You think it's bad now? The price is going to get higher. And And that does something. When you do that with people and you live like that, that does something to your insides. It changes your brain chemistry. It turns you into a different person, human being. I'm telling you, it happens. It's happened to me. So what was the answer? Well, practice selflessness. That's the answer. Well, how do you do that? Somebody had to teach me how to do that. I had no idea how to do that. And it took some time. It's taken time. I still run into situations where I have to ask myself and go ask somebody else, how do I do this? How do I be considerate here? Because my first thought is not that. I mean, I don't, my sponsor said to me, whatever your first thought is, just do the opposite and you'll be fine. And that's true. Because my first thought is not about you. It's about me. Okay.
We're going to continue from the top of page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone. I think we've well covered the long period of reconstruction ahead, the remorseful mumbling that we are sorry. My sponsor told me specifically not to say I was sorry. You've been sorry all your life, David. You've been apologizing all your life, man. You know? What they get to hear, and he framed it in terms of a gift. What you're giving them is a gift, and the gift is they get to hear, their ears get to hear your lips speak the words, I was wrong. I treated you badly. I failed to consider you. What can I do? So now this business of analyzing the past with the family and being careful not to criticize them is difficult for me. I'm sure it's easy for you guys. But I've been burdened with the gift of insight. I have a laser sharp focus on what you're doing wrong, what you need to do to tighten up. And it's all I can do not to say that out loud. It's all I can do to keep the focus on David, where David was at fault, where David was wrong, where David's been inconsiderate, lazy, frightened. Inconsiderate, because I've done this inventory. The past as we now see it, right? I mean, there's column A, I hate you because column B, right? And we've already established if you walk into any bar room anywhere in the world, you're going to hear A and B being talked about. And if you're buying the drinks, I'll listen to your column B. God, you're right, he's a son of a bitch. You're a saint, for God's sake, putting up with that. You know? So that whole column A, man, I mean, column A and column B, that's the way I view the world. That's the way I see the past. That's the way I see my wife, my family, my mother, my father, what they've done. But I've done the inventory now, right? I've looked at the third column, what it affects, and my self-esteem, all my precious self-esteem. Oh my God, it's in every single one of my resentments. Apparently, that was the first discovery I made when I did the inventory. If you embarrass me, I want to kill you. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, that's not nice. And then we move over into column four in each of these situations. Where had I been? Where was I at fault? Where was I selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate? Inconsiderate. 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 I spend very little time. I do not toss and turn at night, terrified that you're not going to get everything you want. I'm thinking about me. Keeps me up at night that I'm not going to get everything I want. So how we now see it is that I'm like the tornado roaring through life. I'm selfish and inconsiderate. I've failed to consider you. I've been frightened. I've said and done things that I regret. So when that is on the tip of my tongue to criticize you, it's everything that I can do to just be quiet. And I wish I could tell you I've done that perfectly, but I have not. Every once, I don't know if you ever have this, but it's just irresistible sometimes. It's just been set up so well, you know? Just a couple of quick lines in there, bam, in and out. I use words like weapons, you know? The goal is for you to walk away appropriately ashamed of yourself. And it's not even premeditated. This is the thing that I can't say enough. For me, sometimes I think about, you know, well, he does this, you know. But most of the time, it's just what naturally comes to me. I'm naturally aggressive verbally. So I don't bother my wife with going on and on about spiritual principles. I do have one experience with that. I wasn't even paying attention. I was shaving. I was just shaving. She was talking about something, and I'm in there, and she's talking about something, and I'm half listening, and I just kind of like stuck my head out, and I said, "You might be suffering from a problem that only a spiritual experience can conquer." And I went back to like shaving, you know, and then I looked down, and there she was, all 5 feet tall, looking up at me. "Don't you ever hit me with that shit again." I was like, "What do I do?" So, you know, the glaring thing on that page that just, it's like right dead center in the middle of the page, our behavior will convince them more than our words. Bam, there it is. You know, my sponsor told me, you know, if someone's telling you something and they're doing something else, go with the behavior. Go with the behavior. And if I'm telling you one thing and I'm doing another, go with the behavior. But it's the behavior that we watch. It's the behavior that we pay attention to. And if my behavior is that of being considerate, of being patient, of being kind, day in and day out, keeping my promises, day in and day out, answering the telephone, day in and day out, rolling up my sleeves, doing the dishes, whether I dirtied them or not, taking the trash out, not looking for a medal for it, actually trying to be of service, then that does eventually, over this long constructive period of construction, that does become the norm. I mean, that is the norm in my home today. There are, people do expect me basically to do what I say I'm going to do, because I generally do what I say I'm going to do. And they generally, you know, they're not looking for me to come kick the door in and knock the furniture over and start shouting out minute details and instructions that they need to follow. I've done those things. But it's not the norm today. But again, I haven't achieved a perfect release from these things. So the other piece of this, no, that's in the next paragraph. Okay.
Okay. So there's a part in the fourth step in the book that says we're prepared to look at it from a different perspective. And this is really the different perspective that's talking about in the fourth step, active in the ninth step. God provides that perspective after doing this. And the most important few words in this paragraph are we should not talk incessantly. And I just want to take that home. Don't talk incessantly. That's the biggest thing, that the biggest obstacle to a relationship with another human being. Stop trying to explain myself. Stop trying to make them understand. Stop trying to get them to agree. If I could just take the position where I'm going to trust God to give me the perspective that I need to lead me into the place that I need to go, instead of me directing the show, which is what this is about. Because why would I sit down with somebody that I've damaged and talk to them about God? And last week we talked about that being leading with the chin, you know? It's arrogant, and it's oppressive, and it's just damn dishonest. It's dishonest. Because I shouldn't be talking about God to anybody. I should be talking to God, but not talking to anybody about God. And especially, you know, particularly the people that I've damaged. So I walk myself into right thinking. I don't think myself into right action. You know, the action, it's the constant. I don't know how many thousands of times I heard this when I would call my sponsor. Look where, she'd say to me, look at your feet. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what? Look at my feet. Is she listening? And okay. She said, where are you standing? What are you doing? And then she said, can you come present to the moment and be present there? Can you do that? Can you stop having expectations, demands, entitlements, all this? Once, she would say to me all the time, God saved you from an alcoholic death. I don't think you're entitled to anything. And that would really piss me off. Because I thought the reason I got sober was to have it all, right? I came here to fix my life, right? That's why I came here. And then I got the news that that isn't why you're here. That's not why God let you stay here. That may be why you think you came here, but that's not why God let you stay here. So I try to notice when I'm talking incessantly to somebody, trying to convince them of something, and try to be quiet and pray. That's what I've always been taught. Stop talking and pray. Be quiet. Get quiet. Because God cannot communicate with you if you're busy, busy, busy in here. Thanks.
Okay, we're out of time. We normally read one more paragraph, and then we read those wonderful promises that come after the ninth step. But I'm just going to... Pardon me?
We can open it. Okay.
All right. If we are... And my sponsor, when he reads this, always points out that these come after the ninth step. They're not just magical... Bam! And we love these promises because we're getting something here, right? Mm-hmm. More for me. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We'll comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Which I think... my personal opinion is, if we work for them, is much more quotable than we think not. But, sorry to abuse my place at the table here. But I will clean up a couple of these little parables, being willing to do these things. My wife and I did reconcile about a year and a half into recovery, or my reemergence into the Alcoholics Anonymous. We were separated for about a year and a half. I did... my sponsor, who walked with me through all of that and guided me through all of that, very quickly after we reconciled, I called and I made one attempt to complain about her behavior to him, and he stopped me in mid-sentence and said, well, just remember, you're the one who made her crazy. And I hung up the phone, and I thought, well, note to self, don't complain to the sponsor about Mama anymore. And that woman, that the 20-something woman that I had blackened her eyes, that saw the worst of my alcoholism. I turned 52 years old. Nobody saw that coming. I wasn't supposed to live past 30. I turned 52 years old last week, and she and I, we both called each other Bud. She called me Bud. I called her Bud. And on my Facebook page from her was Happy Birthday, Bud. And so... I don't know that I can ever fully right that wrong, but there's clearly some healing that's gone on there. And that's everything I know. You know, God has done for me what I can't do for myself. You know, left to my own devices, I will grab everything and yours and keep it to myself. And you guys have taught me to come here and to participate and to do for others. And I'm learning how to do that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, David. Okay. We're passing the seventh tradition baskets for
Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It's both a privilege and responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Do we have any announcements?
Greg Alcoholic.
Gregor!
The ODU, formerly known ODU meeting, is now the 49th Street Living Sober officially. And to celebrate, we're having a speaker, Eric M. from Richmond, and a cake for no reason. And I will now stop announcing it because it is this Thursday. So please come.
What time?
5:30.
The speaker's at 5:30?
Yeah, speaker at 5:30 and then probably cake after or something.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
Does everybody know about April 1st, the Simple Actions Group? This group, the group you're sitting in, April 1st, about a month from now, is having another supper and a speaker event. Christy E. is coming down from Richmond. She's going to tell her story at the regular meeting time, 7 p.m. Prior to that, 6 p.m., potluck. Please bring a dish, enjoy some fellowship. Potluck at 6, speaker at 7, April Fool's Day in the church. Please come. Oh, it's and everyone's welcome. Al-Anon, Al-Ateen, Al-Atat, family, friends, whatever.
The church and group has 6 birthdays this Wednesday, and there's a speaker from Mississippi coming that's going to be speaking. It's at 8 o'clock at Centenary United Methodist Church on Cedar Lane. And District 24 is having a workshop on the 12 Traditions, March 11th. It's a Monday from 6:30 to 8 o'clock at St. Christopher's on Cedar Lane. And that starts at 6:30, March 11th. Thanks.
Anything else?
Will this meeting be here next week? Or?
We'll be in the church next week, actually, yeah.
The Boy Scouts are going home.
There's one other date in 2013 where we'll be kicked out of the church, but that's it, and I don't remember what it is, but we'll let everybody know.
It's on the website, too.
Oh, good. Yeah. Huh, somebody thought of that.
Okay. We are home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of the home group members. Everybody raise your hands after the meeting. We do have big books for sale. Please see one of us after the meeting. Do we have any newcomers? First time, first 30 days, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
My name's Darren, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Donna.
Darren, welcome.
My name's Trey, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Darren, welcome.
Hi, I'm Yasmin, an alcoholic.
Yes, welcome.
I'm Jen, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jen.
Okay, welcome. Sponsorship is in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you don't delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. Thanks to everybody who participated. After we clean up, everybody's invited to continue the conversation on the steps we discussed tonight, and all are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting at Bella Pizza. And I'm going to read 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you'll surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Amen. Okay, we'll close with our Father.
Shut her down.
Yes, ma'am.
That's what comes with sitting up front.
Just made it.
Hey,
trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom,